through that, and when the brigade landed on the beach, two of their ships were immediately sunk by these three jets. They were strafed and beat up by the jets. We lost 16 planes to the jets, and the brigade did not succeed, as the report, again, that was written by Maxwell Taylor in the attendance with Alan Dulles and with Admiral Burke and Bobby Kennedy, the committee that had been assigned, they summed it up by saying the cancellation of the strikes planned for dawn at D-Day, they say the last mention was probably the most serious cause of failure, as it eliminated the last favorable opportunity to destroy the Castro Air Force on the ground.
Well, you know, the way they've rewritten history, they always tell us that we were supposed to send in an American Air Force cover, you know, and Kennedy wouldn't send in the American Air Force. And the fact that it wouldn't involve our Air Force at all, it would involve the CIA covert Air Force, which had all the cover on it. But that isn't brought out at all. It's the idea that Kennedy wouldn't ask the Air Force or the Navy to come in to protect them. And yet this thing was all planned out in one man, McGeorge Bundy. And our listeners, later on, we're going to give you a lot more information on George Bundy, because I think that he is one of the most sinister individuals in contemporary history. And we'll tell you a little bit more at another date about the part he played in bringing us into Vietnam. And I think he's a very unreliable individual, and I think he misused his power tremendously. So the Bay of Pigs then failed, and Kennedy was furious. And what was his reaction to the CIA at that time? He felt that they'd really betrayed him, didn't he?
Again, we get one of these major turning points in our government. Because this study group that Kennedy had established, all experts, very different personalities. Just imagine a room where these different people had to meet every day. General Maxwell Taylor had been chief of staff of the Army. Admiral Arleigh Burke was the chief of naval operations and the most knowledgeable man of the military support of the Bay of Pigs operation. Alan Dulles himself, the longtime director of Central Intelligence, and the man who sat in the corner quietly in a chair and listening to every word, Bobby Kennedy, the president's brother. Those four men were asked to make this study of what happened and why the operation didn't succeed. Well, when they finished, they not only wrote these paragraphs, one or two of which I just read, but they wrote the proposal for future operations so that the Bay of Pigs and things like that would not be repeated. And what they did was write another National Security Action Memorandum, this time number 55, a very important paper that historians have just completely scrubbed out of the books, that says that the president considers the Joint Chiefs of Staff to be his advisors in peacetime as they would be in wartime, for what were called peacetime operations, or another euphemism for clandestine operations. This policy definitely, had Kennedy lived, would have removed the CIA from any participation in major clandestine operations.
And
that
then
was a very powerful statement, but Kennedy was killed and he didn't have the chance to carry that out.
And actually Kennedy fired Alan Dulles, didn't he, and was moving to try to strip the CIA of its power?
Well, he did. He fired Alan Dulles, and he fired General Cabell and Mr. Bissell, the three men who were most responsible for the Bay of Pigs program, and really the three senior people of the CIA. Nothing like that has happened since the CIA was established in 1947.
And so Kennedy really, really went on record, and at one point in your book said, you made the comment that he said he was going to break the CIA into 1,000 pieces.
It's reported that he was talking with his good friend, Chief Justice Douglas, and told him that he said, I'm going to break the CIA into 1,000 pieces, and that's been quoted by many writers and has appeared in many newspapers.
And so we approach then November of 1963. Kennedy has put out a directive that we're going to get our troops out of Vietnam. What was it, 1,000 out by the end of that year, and all of our troops out by 65?
Yes, and you know, it's hard to express what that did as it went around through the higher levels of official Washington. power centers within the city and within the government had been leaning toward a major war. I mean, just think, 550,000 men fought in Vietnam at one time. I don't know if you've ever heard this figure. 10 million men were flown to Vietnam during the Vietnam War. That means after 1965.
Back and forth.
By commercial contract airlift. 10 million men were, at one time or another, involved in Vietnam. A major war. But Kennedy was not going to do, he was not going to put Americans there. And this developed pressures within the city, within the military, within what we call, or what Eisenhower called, the military-industry complex, within other power groups who look forward to the windfall of some $200 to $550 billion that we eventually spent in Vietnam that would not have been spent, and the 10 million men would not have been involved. It's a major thing when Kennedy said, I'm going to take all U.S. personnel out of Vietnam by the end of 55, and the way that was worded also tells us a story. He didn't write all U.S. military personnel. He said all U.S. personnel, because in 63, the predominant number of people in the operating and command positions in Vietnam were CIA people. They were coming out. Well, when he did that, you could go into a meeting somewhere, and anybody that mentioned the name Kennedy would start an uproar. They hated him.
And you were in the military, you were going to those meetings, and everybody hated Kennedy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Bad to say.
And one of the things that we talked about earlier when I called you today, and I just want to mention this for the listening audience, and I don't know how you feel about it, but there was, and I remember this very well, because I had a very good friend who was involved with the gold mining and with money and studying the monetary system, and that is that President Kennedy had also talked about doing away with the debt currency that we have. In other words, all the money that we have in circulation, interest is paid to the Federal Reserve System. It's not simply a dollar in circulation. It's a debt currency unit. And he was talking about having the government issue money that didn't pay money to the Federal Reserve. He was concerned about that. That happened perhaps a few weeks before he took his trip to Dallas.
Well, you know, it's good to have you broaden it this way, because it wasn't just Vietnam, and it wasn't just the Bay of Pigs. The Kennedy administration came into power at a very important time in our history, following World War II and the changes that came after that, following the recognition of the fact that the hydrogen bomb had become so powerful that there was no way you could use it for victory in a major war. And this was causing all kinds of concern within the government and within industry as to which way we're going to go. If you've read the introduction to my book that was written by Oliver Stone, you'll notice how people, as he dwells on the subject and broadens it very much, how people were deeply concerned about the future of our government faced with those problems. And it wasn't just Vietnam, but there's a money problem, you are right. The banking problem is another thing. And I'm a graduate of the Graduate School of Banking at Madison, Wisconsin, and I know quite a bit about banking. One of my instructors was Arthur Burns, the head of the Federal Reserve System, and I could talk about that all day with pleasure, because when you start fooling with the Federal Reserve System, you get a lot of people up in arms. And it was all of that. You know, Kennedy had revised the TFX procurement program. Probably most people have forgotten that the airplane is called the F-111 now. But that program in 1960 was worth about $6.5 billion, the biggest procurement program ever to be led by the Air Force and the Navy. And when Kennedy came in and McNamara, they changed that from a program that was presumed to go to the Boeing company and allocated it to a combination of the General Dynamics Company and Grumman for reasons that would have really change the procurement system of the Pentagon. Now, you don't do that lightly. So all of these things were adding up against Kennedy. There was no one thing that caused his death, and certainly not one man with an old beat-up rifle. There were many, many power centers that coalesced until there was a consensus that led to a decision that had him killed professionally by experts.
And there, of course, there are many, many stories. There are some 600 books or something like that written about the assassination, each one challenging the other and creating sort of a state of confusion on the part of people who read them. And you just you don't know whether it was the Cubans or the Mafia or the lone assassin theory. There's so many books out there that people really can't look at what happened clearly and realize that the story of the lone assassin just is totally preposterous.
You know, this is a human trait, human nature. Stanley, if you decided you wanted to rob the bank down the street, it'd be very convenient for you to have dinner tonight with a couple old friends and tell them you were going to Las Vegas for a week. See, you were going. So these old friends and others you told could swear in court that it couldn't have been you robbing the bank. You were in Las Vegas. And furthermore, you probably had a couple of friends in Las Vegas tipped. In other words, the creation of a cover story is more important than the crime, because that's how you make a successful crime. If you don't have a good cover story, your crime's not a success. Well, now, the proof of the massive nature of the crime that led to the conspiracy, I'll call it conspiracy, there's no other word for it, that led to the death of Kennedy, was the fact of this cover story that has existed now for more than 29 years. You cannot get a single president of the United States to say that, oh, I don't believe Oswald did it, I don't believe anybody else did it. Oswald did it. I don't believe there was a conspiracy. Each president, one after the other, says Oswald did it the way the Warren, and you know, if you study the Warren Commission report for 15 minutes, you know it is false, it's mythology, but as you say, about 600 books have been written. Any newspaper in this country will print tomorrow that Oswald killed Kennedy. We have senators in Congress who will stand up and say Oswald killed Kennedy. In fact, one of the senators in Congress is this fabulous magician who created the magic bullet. And he's a senator in Congress, and he tells us that bullet fired by Oswald from the sixth floor up went into Kennedy's back, out of his throat, into Connolly's back, through his ribs on the right side, broke his ribs, hit his wrist and broke the wrist bones, kept going and went down into his thigh, and to this day, Connolly has parts of that bullet in his thigh that they have not extracted. And this fine gentleman in our Senate invented that story because they had to keep the number of bullets down to three, so he had one bullet do the job of about five.
Is that our Senator Specter?
Yes, our right. Specter.
Well, in one place in the book, and I think that everybody really would want to get a hold of this book, Vietnam, the CIA, and the Plot to Kill Kennedy, I hope I have that in the right sequence, where they quote Lyndon Johnson shortly before his death as saying, that he believed the assassination in Dulles had been part of a conspiracy, and he said, "I never believed that Oswald acted alone, although I can accept that he pulled the trigger. We've been operating a damn murder incorporated in the Caribbean." That quote comes from the Atlantic Monthly, July of 1973. I wonder why most of our public never heard that quotation.
Well, you know, that's a very important item, because let's step back just a little bit. On the 29th of November in 1963, Lyndon Johnson had a list of names in his hand that he was going to appoint the Warren Commission, and he wanted to check that list, as they're doing with lists today for President Clinton, with the director of the FBI. So he called Hoover over. Most people may not remember that Hoover and Johnson were neighbors for 19 years in Washington, knew each other very well. So after they talked about the Warren Commission nominees, and Hoover approved all of them except one, Johnson leaned over to Hoover, and I have a copy of this written memorandum signed by Hoover, by the way. I mean, it's current history. You can read this. He turned to Hoover and he said, "How many bullets were fired?" Hoover said, "Three. We have them. We have the cases, and we know the rifle. We have three of them." And then Johnson said, were any fired at me? Imagine, Lyndon Johnson was two cars back. Theoretically, this gunman was way up on a sixth floor, and somehow Johnson felt that a bullet or more might have been fired at him, and he asked Hoover, of all people, were any fired at me, see? So you know very well that Johnson was educated by those bullets. And later, in 1973, after he had had very serious heart trouble and knew that he was not going to live much longer, he called an old reliable friend and writer, Leo Janus, and they had a long discussion down at his ranch of Peter Nalas. And Janus wrote a beautiful article in the 1973 July issue of the Atlantic Monthly Magazine, which any of you can get on microfilm in your library. And he said these three things, and these are very important. He said, I always knew it was a conspiracy, the murder of Kennedy. I knew that Oswald did not do it, at least not alone. And third, and this is the most important statement of all, he said, we maintain a murder incorporated. Now, most people have no awareness of what is called a murder incorporated within a government. But now think back. You know what a firing squad is. A government has firing squads. You know what an electric chair is. You know what the guillotine is. Governments have the power, the authority, and the system to kill people. And in Lyndon Johnson's times, he said, we maintain a murder incorporated. What he meant by that was that Kennedy had been killed by professionals who work on contract, and I can affirm that they're not in the United States. They live in a place outside, and I know about them. And they are on call if the right source makes the call through certain codes, and a man like Kennedy can be killed. No, it's that simple. It's that terrible, and it's that true. Lyndon Johnson said it all.
And you worked in the higher echelons of government, and this sort of thing is actually done as part of covert operations?
Regrettably, I'll have to say yes, because we know that there are assassinations. I worked for a general during my term that we've described, who came back from a meeting at the White House, burst into the office and said, Prouty, go down to personnel and get my retirement papers. My God, he was a general with a big job. I went down and got them and came back. So what's the matter, General? He said, they've decided that so-and-so, and he named the man, head of a country, has to be killed. He says, I don't want any part of that. So he retired. The next week, the man he was talking about was killed. Now, I can't say that I was there. I can't say that I knew exactly how he was killed, but that general had been at the White House. That general told me he got his retirement papers and he left on account of that. And then I also know how the business operates. He wrote about it in my book.
Yes, you
and
said.
I don't think that Johnson was fabricating anything. He knew that we operated a murder incorporated.
I think one of the most interesting things you had suggested before we have our conversation that I get hold of Jim Garrison's On the Trail of the Assassin. And on page 56, he tells about a James A. Wilcott, a former CIA finance officer who testified before the House Select Committee, that was the congressional investigation, that Lee Harvey Oswald had been recruited from the military by the CIA with the express purpose of being a double agent assigned to the USSR, and that actually Mr. Wilcott had financed Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, that was never brought out to the public. You wonder how something as interesting as that coming before a congressional committee, part of the public record, and yet nobody's ever heard of it.
The real reason that I wrote this book, well, the two books, is that I have observed so much in history, many of the things that I myself experienced. I've had the experience of sitting in their own homes with John Foster Dulles and with Alan Dulles and with people like that simply because I was the person doing the work that they needed. I was the guy with the briefcase, you might say. As a result, I can affirm that some things happened like this back through the years that have never been in history books. The greatest way to distort history is by omission. I could spend all night telling you how the Pentagon Papers are just as corrupt as could be, because although they dumped 4,000 documents on the doorstep of several newspapers, among them the New York Times, they should have dumped about 5,000 documents, because the most important ones had been extracted, not included. They were extracted, and that's how you change history.
And, of course, you think that the point that you made was that the CIA intentionally leaked the Pentagon Papers to give the people the impression they were getting the whole story, whereas they got the laundered part of it.
Well, clearly.
All right.
Because if you're in a position to study them carefully, and then if you have some personal experience with some of these events, you can just see that there's just the most important things are just missing. It's like this document, NSAM 263, one of the most important, one of the ones that they have pounded on stone and myself for since the movie. These writers with the big newspapers and the commentators on the big networks say there is no substantial history to support such a statement.
Well, look,
they could look in their own papers when the document came out and see it listed in the headlines. In fact, my book, I show a picture of the front page of a newspaper that says, all troops out of Vietnam by 65. Well, what more do they want? And they say it doesn't exist.
Well, I hope most of our listeners realize as you come up. Colonel, could you stay with us for the part of the next hour for a while?
I'd be glad to.
Fine, thank you. Well, then we're going to have to break for the news here. We have several callers on the line. If they'd like to hold on, we'll take you right after the news. Remember, this is KFER 89.9 FM on your radio dial. Our guest tonight, this evening, is Colonel Fletcher Prouty, and we'll be back right after the news to bring you more interesting things about the assassination. Anybody wants to hold on, fine. Otherwise, call right back at the turn of the hour.
Some city schoolyard, when bullets and birth control outnumber books, something's wrong.
Network News, I'm Jason Walker. The confirmation of Zoe Bair to become Attorney General is in trouble. In hearings before the Senate Judiciary Committee, Baird said her employment of illegal aliens as domestic workers shouldn't exclude her from the job.
I think that the power of my overall record and the potential that I have to serve this country...